chapter 18 and about verse 36. I've got my mic on. Can you hear me? I can just barely hear you, Dean, when you speak, but I heard you. I can say with a little bit more confidence this morning that the buyers are out of town. I didn't know last week that they were sick, but they were not able to advance the last day. They are able to be back this coming week. John, the 18th chapter, verse 34. Good to see you everybody this morning. I appreciate your participation, your thoughts and questions, anything that you can add to the study is right. Certainly, we're all enjoying hearing you. So, this isn't a lot by any means. The book of John is a very interesting book, a different perspective, and it's called a synoptic gospel. The other, Matthew, Mark, Luke, are all kind of written from the same perspective, but John Kurtz is significantly different.
I'm cranking it real high. I still might get it. We're working on it.
Working it out. That's working a lot. I'll shake that. I've got it a little bit closer to my
Can I borrow it for a second?
Okay, now you turn it out.
Did you really amp that thing up? Okay, now we'll try this way. We're to a point where Jesus is before Pilate, and he is being asked if he is a king. Being asked about his kingdom, and his replies are sound replies. Obviously, Jesus is going to tell the truth. He's going to say the things that need to be said at the right times, and he's going to say it in a way that has the most effect. Even though sometimes he's not going to reply, it's still going to have an effect. So his conduct cannot be impugned in any way. John 18, verse 34, this is somewhat of a challenging verse to deal with. Verse 34 says, "And Jesus answered, Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you concerning me?" And this is in reply to when Pilate, in the praetorium, called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Now, why would he want to ask that question?
Where's his source?
Is he
a believing Jew, or has he been told that by the Jews?
Yes, and of course what the Jews were saying, well, Jesus is a king. He's here to establish a kingdom and to
usurp the authority,
contend against Rome. And he is somewhat defending himself when he says, who's making the charge? Did somebody tell you about that? Did somebody accuse me of that? did you or any Roman citizen ever see me breaking a Roman law? I'm being held in essentially a trial. And Pilate, you're the judge. So who's accusing me? And if a Roman made the charge, there might be some process of convicting Jesus. And that is why the question is asked. But why would the Jews find fault with a person attempting to free them from Roman domination? I think that's the next big question that or thought that needs to be addressed. If Jesus is the king of a kingdom, and Pilate knows that it's the Jews that are saying, he said he's the king of the Jews, and he's here to usurp Roman authority, then why are the Jews saying bad things about Jesus? Joe?
I think one of the things, the politics that's going on, the Jews already had a king, a physical king, even though they didn't necessarily recognize the Herods and things like that. The people were in charge of the Judean realm, Jerusalem and all that. So Pilate would have been aware of who the actual leading authorities were, because they had in control. And in this aspect here, the Jews would have had not necessarily the king of the physical realm, but spiritually, the one who's trying to be decided. And that's what they're upset. It's plus all the power that comes from Rome in the first place. They weren't allowed to do your word, but that's wrong to get in there, especially.
Well, I agree with your statements that that Pilate should have known to a certain extent, but this is a new charge by the high priest, the Sanhedrin court, the elders of the Jews, and they're accusing Jesus of saying, "I am the king of the Jews. I am here to establish a kingdom." And you mentioned the word politics. The Jews from the very beginning, early on in the account that John writes about, that they conspired together to kill Jesus. And what they were looking for was a way for Jesus to be killed, but they would not be involved. They could not give the sentence of death, if we talked about last time. So they were looking for the role of some entity, in this case, the Roman Empire, to crucify Jesus. So they had to make it look like we weren't involved in it, but at the same time, they're championing the charge. And of course, Pilate, he is the governor of this area of the Roman Empire, so he didn't want anything to come up in the way of a dispute that gets back to Rome, but he's not keeping the citizens of this area under control. I almost used the word happy. That's not what his role was, but under control. Okay. I wrote down that Pilate knew that the Jews resisted being ruled by the Roman Empire, and they were looking for an opportunity to rebel against Rome. So why would they hate Jesus, who was proclaiming to be a king of the Jews? And by this hatred of Jesus, Pilate understood Jesus was not the type of king that the Jews desired. Remember, we've read that Jesus had a kingdom, but it was not of this world. If it is not of this world, then it doesn't have servants. So he's not here to upset the ruler of the Roman Empire, so to speak. Well, what type of king did the Jews want? One that would establish a kingdom here upon earth, allowing them to no longer be under Roman rule.
Well, I was going to say that that's the irony, is that at this point in time in history, a lot of those Jews were expecting a Messiah to come in on a horse with a sword to physically wipe Rome off the face of the planet and restore the Jews as the highest societal, you know,
right,
rule. And that's what they wanted. That's not what they got. And so that's what they accused him of.
And yeah, they certainly had a problem in the way that Jesus was showing he was not here to establish an earthly kingdom. And that made them upset. They were going to lose their position, even with the Romans, if he was successful. In John 18, verse 35, Pilate simply replies with a statement, and it is, "Am I a Jew?" He was having a problem understanding why the Jews were asking the question and pursuing Jesus and bringing him before them. So, if your kingdom's not of the world, I don't have a problem with that. So why are you Jew? Why are the Jews pursuing him? "Your own people," he said, it seemed to say, "delivered you to me. What is it that you have done to stir them up so much?" And said another way, "How am I to understand why the Jews hate you? For I am not a Jew." Remember John 11, verses 47 and 48? It reads, "Then gathered the chief priests and Pharisees a council and said, 'What do we do? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and our nation.'" Verse 36, Jesus states, "My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is not from here." In other words, I don't have servants to deliver me from the Jews. And that should, again, convince Pilate, okay, you're right. If your kingdom's not of this world, we're not going to have a war with your servants because they're not here. John 18 and verse 38, for the second time, Pilate asked, "Are you a king then?" And the reply that Jesus said, "You rightly say that I am a king. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And Jesus came to proclaim truth, and those that seek truth heed his teaching. And the Jews should not have been looking for, or pardon me, the Jews should have been looking for the Messiah, as Joe and Bear have said. The Messiah, the one who would fulfill the Old Testament prophecies, the one who did miracles to confirm his words and his actions. All was being done to bring glory to his heavenly Father. And it must have been difficult for Pilate to conceive of a kingdom not of the world. He was a part of the most powerful empires ever to be upon this earth. He had been a soldier, and now was a high-ranking governor of the area who knew the power of the sword. And his idea was, if Christ has a kingdom, he must be a king. Which is the right conclusion. It's just not a physical kingdom. Now, Pilate's sad question was, a little bit later in John 18, what is truth? After Jesus had referred to truth many times. And he was skeptical of what is truth. Didn't have much faith in truth, and even if he found truth, he might have ignored it and not taken action upon it. Just a little bit before, in John 17, verse 17, Jesus prays to his Father, "Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth." So certainly, God's word is the truth that Jesus was here to proclaim. We're going to get into the actions of Pilate. We're already in them, but there's certain steps that Pilate took. He determined that Jesus had a different type of kingdom, one not of this world. And he said in the 38th verse of this chapter, he turned to the Jews and said, "I find no crime in him." And he offered to release to them anyone they wished. And Pilate hoped it would be Jesus, because Pilate knew that he was innocent. And Pilate scourged Jesus as another step, put a crown on him, a robe around him, mocked Jesus as just a man, brought him out as a man and as a king with no power, and declared again in the 19th chapter, verses 1 through 4, I find no crime in him. And Pilate tried to avoid putting an innocent man to death. And again, in John 19 and verse 6, it says, I find no crime in him. Here's a dilemma. The most powerful man in the area, representing the Roman government, and he's got the citizens of this particular area saying, this man is guilty. I think we ought to at least give some credit to Pilate to say, let's hear the charge. And he did. But he declared, I find no crime in him. He's an innocent man, in other words.
Well, in this particular case, I don't think that there's, in this hearing situation, does not appear that this is a general assembly. The Jewish leaders had brought him to be tried for a trumped up charge.
Yes.
At this point, I think that he recognized them as being the leaders of their religious group.
Sure.
And so, as a spokesman type situation, rather than everybody in general.
When I say he said to the Jews, he said to the high priest, the elders of the Jews that had taken Jesus to Pilate's palace, so to speak, to the praetorium. They didn't go in, but Pilate went out to them. And it was that group. Now, I'll point out some timelines here in just a little bit. This is 6 a.m. Now, 6 a.m. back then isn't 6 a.m. to us. But it's early. And they did it under darkness. And one of the reasons they did it that early was to avoid the fact that the common Jew may have had a lot more confidence that this is the Messiah, or that he could be the Messiah. And they didn't want to get the rest of the Jewish community to offset their focus in front of Pilate. So thanks for pointing that out. I certainly wanted to make sure that was the context that you're addressing, that it was a very limited number of the higher up of the Jews that were in front of Pilate. Mike?
I think it's important to bring out here that Pilate believed that he was innocent, that he was not guilty of anything. He had him scourged, had his thing put on him. They beat him a few times, brought him out and said, here's your man. What do you want me to do with it? He said, I find no offense in him at all. And they still said, crucify.
Yeah.
And he knew what was coming up, what they had to do. He pretty much washed his hands of the situation. That's what's going on here. And he knew it. And he just didn't want to. I think he thought that it'd be better to have this man crucified and satisfy these leaders so that he doesn't have followers.
Yeah.
But then that's what the Bible and God had wanted and knew was going to happen and been prophesying all along that it would. It's just the fulfillment of everything that is coming, and this was the fullness of time.
Yes. The conduct of Jesus is admirable, but we'll get to a point here of where we're going to look at the things that he did were prophesied, and he was fulfilling those step by step. And the fulfillment of the prophecies that Jesus has in front of Pilate are very, very convincing. it should have convinced those higher-up Jews and the regular Jews who knew the Old Testament, well, he's doing this, this is happening, and then this is not just an ordinary man. We're going to identify two people later, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who were higher-up Jews, and it refers to them as saying they believed in Jesus. In fact, Joseph and Nicodemus. Joseph comes to at least Pilate and asks for the body of Jesus. So, lots of points we can make along that line. And again, thanks for making them. Sam?
There's a parable that Jesus tells, the parable with the bond dressers. And I think I tend to see that as different than the Pharisees. And it even says the Pharisees perceived that he was talking about the Lord. But he says as the master of the house and the vineyard. When it came to harvest, he sent servants to collect the harvest, but he killed the servants. But then he sent his son. And they say, well, the tenants, they recognize the son as an heir. And they say, let's kill him and take his inheritance. And then they say they perceive that. The Pharisees perceived that Christ was talking about that. I think they recognize Jesus as the rightful king of the kingdom, but they don't understand the power of God in that he can, they're trying to work against God and take the inheritance of the Son. They're making the bet that if we kill him, then we can retain our power. And we can play this game with the Romans and eventually cast them off. They wanted to maintain the power of his kingdom.
Yeah.
So I think they knew that he was the Messiah, right?
Okay. Fred, I'll get to you in just a minute. John 11, you know, they had their secret meeting, so to speak, and said, well, if he is the Christ, then we're going to lose our position as the Jews. And then it refers to Pilate a couple of times in late 18 and in 19, that Pilate realized that the Jews were taking actions because of their envy of what Jesus was doing. Fred?
In Matthew 27:19, I don't know if you're going to bring this out or not, but it says, while he, talking about Pilate, was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, have nothing to do with this, that just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him. And 20 it says, but the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. Pilate didn't want to kill Jesus. He did not want to kill him.
And I think Pilate weighed the options. Do I keep the Jews happy, or do I kill an innocent man and maybe have a little bit of advice come from Rome, don't do that again. Who is he going to make happy, so to speak? Well, he was going to make the Jews. In fact, there's a verse in Mark that I'll refer to here in a minute. It says that Pilate, in an effort to content the Jews, to placate them, to make them happy, said, okay, here you go. And he turned Jesus over to Roman soldiers, and they took him off to crucify him. So, was there a concerted effort of the Jewish hierarchy to see that Jesus was put to death? Certainly so. Certainly so. Again, I appreciate your comments. I wanted to point out something in Matthew about this count. Matthew 27, verses 11 through 14 reads, and Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, thou sayest. And when he was accused of the chief priests and the elders, he answered, nothing. Then Pilate said unto him, hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee? And he answered him, never a word. insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. And some say that Pilate asked, "What is truth?" out of scorn or ridicule. Like, well, you know, that's a, what does that statement have to do with what's going on today? And others say that Pilate may have been impressed by the conduct of Jesus and asked the question because of his own curiosity of who Christ was. Whatever the reason, Pilate knew the high priests were taking this action against Jesus because of their envy. Matthew 27, verse 18, also in Mark 15, verses 9 and 10, for he knew that the envy, he knew that for envy they had delivered him. Matthew 27, 19 reads, when he sat down on the judgment seat, his wife sent, here we go, Fred, unto him saying, have thou nothing to do with this just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. Pilate leaves the room to tell the Jews he finds no crime in Jesus. No reason, no valid reason for the Roman Empire to put him to death. And then in John 18, back to John 18, verses 39 and 40, the Romans had developed a way to find favor from the Jews, and that was through a custom of releasing a guilty person during the Passover week. A savvy politician, Pilate, asked the Jews, paraphrasing John 18, verse 38, since I didn't find any fault in him at all, verse 39, will you therefore that I release unto you the King of the Jews? Pilate is offering to release Jesus to the Jews. And then they all cried, that is all of the higher up Jews that were there, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was a robber, but he's also identified as a murderer later on.
Yes. My translation says that he's identified as a revolutionary.
Yes.
Which, that would fit more into their agenda of overthrowing Rome anyway.
Yes. More of an inflammatory word, isn't it? What word do we use today? There we go. Dean?
The expression there, what is truth, rings a bell to me of what we hear today.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to define what truth is or where it originates. And I think he is, maybe this fits the same situation. He is a pagan. There's no declaration that he understands Christianity at all, or Christ at all, or the Jews. He's not a Jew. He's just declared that. So whose truth are you trying to promote? Maybe more like it. And that's one of those. Then he turns around and he puts the blame, he puts the responsibility of whether he lives or dies, on the Jews themselves. He doesn't want that responsibility of declaring which way this is going to go. So he finds a way, this exception of being able to release one or the other, to place the blame squarely on their shoulders.
Yes, certainly did. When he offered to give Jesus to them, I think it was you that made the comment, he came out and he washed his hands of this innocent man. And what did the Jews say?
His death be upon us.
Death be upon us and our
children.
Okay. Were they short-sighted? Mike?
Well, Jesus claimed to be the truth.
Yes.
And he said, if you want to know the truth, you have to know me. And then he didn't say much else after that. And Pilate was aware of what the truth was, why they were there, and what was happening, I think. And he was just trying to get
refer to, and then you made the distinction, okay, here's the higher ups of the Jews pushing the point before Pilate. But there were verses before in John of where people who heard Jesus speak, and they would say, never a man before has spoken like this. What about his miracles? Were they convincing?
Yes,
very much so. So there was a group of Jews who recognized, and they were supportive, whatever degree it was at their point in time in this process, they were supportive of Jesus. Remember Acts 2, as Peter completed his sermon, it records that there were 3,000 people that obeyed the gospel that day. Were they Jews or Gentiles?
Jews.
They were Jews at that point. We'll get to where things open up for the Gentiles in Acts 10 at some point. I know y'all know Acts backwards and forwards probably, but everything right now is focusing toward the Jews. And the higher-ups of the Jews are doing a good job of rejecting and of essentially bringing Christ to the cross. Now, as was pointed out, and we've made the point from here and even among the members of the class, this was a point of God. Jesus knew when he came to earth that he would be crucified. Remember, he referred to, I think it was Peter who said something about Jesus, you know, this could never be so, but Jesus somewhat said, I've got to drink the cup that our Lord has given me. In other words, I've got to be offered as a sacrifice. Now, I wanted to, Barrett, is that a hand?
Yeah. I wanted to speak to Jesus' silence against the accusations of the Jews. I think all too often we just kind of chalk that up to him saying, okay, what's done is done. But Jesus knows, and he knows they know, that everything they're saying is false. The Proverbs teach, do not answer a foolish man according to his folly. So Jesus has nothing to say, and that's a perfect example to us. I'm not going to sit there and fight somebody over something I know is false, and they, in their heart, should know is false as well. And so I think that is something to point out. A lot of times I feel like that silence is just cast off as, all right, he's surrendering, he's giving up. But that's not what it is. It's wisdom that he is displaying in not answering a fool according to his law.
Well, that's one of the reasons, I think, Pilate, as he asked Jesus, are you a king? Are you a king? And not a word was said. It may have made Pilate take a second look. Well, why isn't this person attempting to defend themselves? But yet, when Pilate heard it, he probably had never read Isaiah 53, verse 7. But who should have recognized it? The Jews, as a lamb led to the slaughter, as a lamb before his shearers, said not a word. Silence is worth a lot at certain times. We'll get to a point where a centurion who was apparently involved in the crucifixion, his conclusion is surely this man was the Son of God. And it was by the conduct of Jesus that convinced that centurion to say that. And I look at a centurion as being a hardened Roman soldier. Sometimes I jokingly say that, you know, somebody doesn't have heart. They just have a gizzard that thumps. That's the only way the blood's getting around in their body. I wanted to do a real quick review of Judas. It's not recovered or recorded in John, but in Matthew 27, verses 3 through 5, Matthew records it. It was about this time where the Jews, the higher up of the Jews that had hired Judas to betray Jesus, were confronted by Judas. He came back essentially. It says, then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, that is, Jesus was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And I love this reply. Not really, of the Jews. It says, and they said, what is that to us? See thou to that. And Judas cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed, and he went and hanged himself. The Jews didn't have a lot of sympathy. That was behind them. We'd already accomplished what we wanted to by the actions of Judas. Now you have some remorse about it. It doesn't affect us. We're going to march on. We're going to still pursue the crucifixion of Jesus. I read in a couple of sources that the word repented, does that mean a change in heart that results in a change of action? The other thinking is, well, no, it's really more of a remorse. That I'm sorry that this thing already happened, in other words. But the fact is that Judas threw the silver down, went out and hanged himself. The Jews didn't put the money in the treasury, but they went out and bought a field known as Akeldama. We can read a lot more about that. But I thought this was a good time to at least mention the actions of Judas. The Jews deceived him. They bought him off. But he was a willing participant.
His last act was to sin.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
But the kind of sin doesn't come back.
Right. Matthew 26, verse 24 records for us, the Son of Man goeth as it is written of him, of Judas, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. If it had been good, it had been good for that man if he had not been born. Okay, that's the end of 18. Let's jump into John, the 19th chapter. Unless there's other comments or questions. Okay. A lot to be said about the first 15 verses of John 19. Let me read some of them and then we'll make some comments. It says, then Pilate, let me turn here, I'm going to read out of New King James. So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. Then they said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out again and said to them, Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, Behold the man. Therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. And Pilate said to them, You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. And the Jews answered him, We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, Where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then Jesus said to him, Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? And Jesus answered, You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king, speaks against Caesar. And when Pilate heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, "Behold, your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." The actions of Pilate. He has Jesus scourged. He was hoping, some commentators say, that just the awful beating that a scourging is would be enough to satisfy the Jews. But it wasn't. It says that the soldiers formed a crown. Some say a crown of thorns. Some say it was just a crown made of whatever the local vegetation was, and it was set on his head. Some people say, well, they took that crown of thorns and they pressed it way down on his head and the thorns dug into his skull. Certainly that would be terrible punishment in pain in itself, but I don't see that. I see they had a crown of thorns and they placed it on his head. And that's all. They put the purple robe that a kingly person would wear around him and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And then apparently the Romans smote him, struck him with their hands. Pilate went back and forth and said unto him, "Behold, I bring him forth to you that you may know I find no fault in him." Pilate said unto them, "Behold the man." He's just a man. He's not a king. Don't try to pass that off on me. I recognize him as a king, essentially. Trying to turn the heat down that the Jews were pressing against Jesus and against Pilate himself. Again, Pilate found himself in a dilemma. Do I just turn him over? Well, I could get in trouble with Rome. Or do I take him and declare that he's innocent and I'm going to release him, but not to you Jews? He wasn't going to satisfy everybody in that. And he finally makes a decision. He finally makes a decision. And the Jews, of course, say because of the Passover, it's traditional that the Romans allowed them to release or call for the release of a prisoner. And Pilate was hoping, well, we've said Jesus is an innocent man. Surely that's who they're going to say, let's release Jesus to them. But they didn't. They said Barabbas. And that's not what Pilate expected. And he was more afraid, and he went again into the judgment hall and asked Jesus, "Whence art thou?" But Jesus gave him no answer. I wrote down a verse, Psalm 53, verse 7. Jesus was oppressed, afflicted, opened not his mouth as a lamb led to slaughter, and a sheep before his shearers. And Pilate said unto him, "Speakest not thou to me? Knowest that thou not that I have power to crucify you and have power to release you?" Well, that caused Jesus to speak. He said, "You could not have power at all against me except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto you has the greater sin." That's the Jews. verse 12, and from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried again, saying, if you let this man go, you're not Caesar's friend. A savvy politician headed up the Jews too. They knew this was the way, this was their leverage to get Pilate to release Jesus to be crucified. He finally comes out, he says to the Jews, verse 15, behold your king. But they cried out, away with him, crucify him. And Pilate said unto them, shall I crucify your king? And the chief priests replied, we have no king but Caesar. We'll start there next Sunday. I got to tell you, I realized this week how good a job Kyle Pope did. What he did, he had a cell phone that he taught by. And here I've created almost 30 pages of notes, but Kyle just knew the Bible so much better, and certainly was a much better speaker. So it impressed me, and I thought about it this morning. How did Kyle do that? Thank you for your attention.